Cowardly Furrows by Rufus Offer. Read by the author. Part 1, Chapter 1. The boy was in a bush, and he was not at all comfortable. It was summer, and he was wearing a thin t-shirt and some uncomfortably short shorts. The bush was covered in lots of tiny spikes that stuck into him and made him itch. He was finding it very difficult to use the bush for its intended purpose, which was to hide him from the painfully fearsome and cruel things that he was convinced were out to get him. He needed to be very still and very quiet, but this was proving to be almost completely impossible. Luckily, his fear was overpowering his desire to itch, so with great discomfort, he was managing to do a pretty good impersonation of a statue or some sort of petrified tree stump. The boy's name was Furrows Floof, and he didn't get out of the house very often. But when he did, it was usually to go to the shop to buy sandwich supplies for his mother, Apnea Floof, who was so terrified at the merest suggestion of a thought of a hint of going outside that she would actually stop breathing in dread every time she even walked past a window with the curtains open. If Furrows was scared of the outside world, it was nothing in comparison to Apnea's planet-sized terror. His mum was a strange sort of person and was always coming up with outlandish ingredients to put in sandwiches. Potato chips, lettuce, sardines and chocolate shavings were today's experiment, though he didn't have to buy the sardines as his mum had won a competition from one of those rather boring magazines, the ones with pictures of gardens in the country in them, knitting advice and free crochet patterns, and the prize had been a lifetime supply of the tinned, nasty, slimy fish. Furrows was learning to hate tinned sardines.
He'd taken a long time to get to the shops, which was nothing new.
The shop was only 5 minutes' walk away, but Furrows was such a cautious creature that he'd crouch in every available hiding spot along the way. He lived in a constant state of fear and dread at the vile things that lurked around every corner. Well, at least he lived in a constant state of fear and dread at the many vile things that his mum said lurked around every corner. As I said, she was a bit of an odd sort of woman. In truth, there wasn't nearly as many nasty things around as she thought, if indeed there were any at all. Apnea had sent him to the shops later than usual, and by the time he was heading back, what with all the hiding stops and all, the sun was going down. Furrows was scared of most things, but the dark, well, the dark is scary to most people, but to Furrows, the dark was utterly crippling. He got so scared of the dark sometimes that moving around in it would make his thin, feeble bones creak and crack, and his jaw would ache from his vice-like clenched teeth. Sometimes it was so bad that the tension would freeze him dead still. Furrows knew that one of the first signs of approaching darkness was long shadows. As the sun went down, it made all the shadows get bigger and bigger until they spread over all the land and the darkness came. Dark hours, or the horror time, as Apnea called it, which didn't make him feel much better about the whole thing in the slightest. On his way back from the shops, the shadows had started to get very long indeed. He struggled up the hill with the sun glaring in his face, which made him squint his huge, bulging eyes. He hadn't looked back, and so had failed to see the darkness creep up on him like a villain. As he approached his first hiding spot, he glanced over his shoulder to make sure no monsters had decided to come out before nightfall, and there, on the pavement, stretching back 5 metres and attached to the bottom of his feet, was a terrifying, dark, moving shape. It had huge, long, gangly arms and legs and a positively gigantic head. Panic gripped him. He lost all control of his reason and started squealing uncontrollably. He ran and ran in completely random directions. If you can imagine a huge rubber bouncy ball being fired out of a cannon, ricocheting off the walls of a long, narrow corridor, then you'd probably get a good idea of what Furrows looked like. He boinged and bounced off walls, went spinning off lampposts, fired off gates and fences, until, out of the corner of his panicking and massive worried eye, he saw a bush and hurled himself headlong into it. Most people, when throwing themselves into a spiky bush, would do everything they could to get out of it, and normally Furrows would too, but today Furrows felt differently. For him, the bush and its prickly nastiness was a relief from the blind terror he'd felt just seconds earlier. He'd much rather be prickled and poked than terrorised by an intense, shadowy fiend. He lay there in pain. At least in the bush, the huge, black, gangly, big-headed ogre couldn't see him. Nobody in the history of humankind has ever been as scared of their own shadow as Furrows was on that balmy summer evening. Anyone who has ever played hide-and-seek knows that when you're trying to be still, quiet, and unfound, that your breathing is at its loudest. Every breath in blows a gale, and every breath out sounds like a hurricane. It's a strange occurrence, and there have been many theories about why it happens. Some people believe that there are things called hide-and-seek goblins that have invisible megaphones. They invisibly hold them up in front of your face to make sure that the seekers can hear where you are. Hide-and-seek goblins love being secret and don't like other beings stealing their thunder. They get their revenge by going out of their way to try and spoil things for anyone who's trying to be sneakier than them. This, of course, is why people hold their breath when hiding so as to avoid the goblin megaphones. Furrows' mum believed in hide-and-seek goblins and had told Furrows about them on many occasions. Furrows believed that hide-and-seek goblins were part of why his head was so unnaturally big. He had spent so much time hiding and holding his breath that his head had been blown up like a balloon and his eyes had gone all bulgy. Furrows wasn't very fond of his big head. He couldn't do very much about it, though, as his cowardice was much more powerful than his feelings about his massive melon. One good thing came out of it all, though. He had managed to master the art of tiny breathing. He would take the tiniest of tiny breaths in and let the tiniest of tiny breaths out. This made almost no noise at all, which helped him avoid any meddlesome hide-and-seek goblins that might happen to be in the area. A lot of people think that hide-and-seek goblins aren't real, but then some people still believe that the world is flat, so not everyone can be trusted in these matters. It wasn't long before a new fear started to creep up on Furrows. He'd been lying in the bush for so long that the sun had started to sink down over the horizon, spreading the night's inky, sticky blackness over the world. The horror time was coming.
Oh, crikey! Oh, shuddering shanks!
Furrows' shaky voice muttered inside his head.
Oh, good Blimus!
Footnote. Blimus is the ancient Greek god of unpleasant surprises.
The shadows are getting big. Will they take over? Will all the monsters come out? What a stupid flipping question, Furrows. Of course they will. That's what monsters do, you dunderhead. Mum says so. Oh, my shivering shin splints, what the hell will I do?
He braved a turn of his head to look back at where the monsters had been. His movement made the bush's thorns bite into him, and the branches rustle at what seemed like a deafening volume, but which was, in fact, about as loud as a mouse sneezing.
Oh, shivers! Oh, flippin' flippity flip-flop!
He muttered to himself, his eyes darting around in a panic, as his internal swearing became an interesting new style of garbled gibberish. He waited for a little longer to see if the shadows, which were unsurprisingly getting bigger, would slow down a bit. He hoped against hope that they might even start getting smaller again. This was a ridiculous thing to try and believe, as it would have meant that the sun would have stopped going down and started coming up again, which hardly ever happens. And so, in line with the laws of physics, the shadows got gradually uncomfortably larger and larger. Footnote. The laws of physics are very important, but can be overridden by a number of lesser-known universal laws, including the laws of calamity, and the laws of apparent nonsense. These laws will be illustrated more clearly as the reader advances through this harrowing tale. He twisted his head again, desperately trying not to make any noise. It felt like the thorns would burst his balloon-like head, particularly with all the pressure that was building up inside it from being so scared. The fear of having a popped head, however, was no match for his fear of the dark.
"Maybe Mum will come and find me,"
he thought in a moment of madness.
Oh, don't be a silly sausage, Furrows. You know that she can't go out of the house. There are things outside that want to get her.
Furrows' mum believed that there were a million creeping, murderous and violent things lurking outside of her house. She made Furrows go out because he was smaller and quicker than her. He could outrun them, whereas she was too round and slow to do so.
He turned his head a little more and finally managed to turn it far enough to see where the monster had been.
It had grown. It was big enough to cover the whole street now. Furrow's eyes widened in terror. His bulbous head felt like it would swell until it got to the size of a hot air balloon. He turned his head the other way, and the monster was there too.
Oh, crikey, oh, blimey, oh, good grief, it's everywhere. What if it already caught me? What if I'm already in its tummy right now? What will I do? Won't someone come and help me?
He started to shiver violently, making the bush cut him like barbed wire.
Oh no, I've gone and ended up as dinner!
The thought was too much for his fragile frame.
Panic slapped Furrows hard in the cheek.
He yelped like a dog caught in a fox trap, yanked and scratched his poor prickled body out of the bush and ran home in a high-speed blur of misery, the clammy night stifling his breath every frenzied step of the way. Furrow's mum was sitting in the kitchen tapping her foot. A lot. She had a habit of sitting in the same spot, biting her nails and tapping her foot nervously on the hardwood floor. She tapped her foot so much, and so often, that she had worn the spot almost down to a hole. Every few weeks, she had to change her foot tapping position just before her foot disappeared into the floor. The flooring was a patchy mess of random wood, nailed in at unconventional angles in a desperate attempt to stop the whole kitchen disappearing into the basement, which it threatened to do at any time. She wasn't biting her nails today. She'd bitten them so much that they were sore and bleeding. She had even put some sticky plasters over most of them and had dipped them in a special foul-tasting smelly wax. This was so she wouldn't try to bite off the plasters without meaning to and have a bit of a nibble at the stumpy fingers underneath. Furrow's mum's name was Apnea. She was short and round and had little clumps of hair missing from her scalp. Some of the bald patches were there because she worried so much that her hair just upped and left. Other parts were bald because she would pull clumps out with her own hands during fits of worry. She was in a bit of a tizzy that day because Furrows had spent such a long time getting back from the shop. It was getting dark outside, and she couldn't bear the thought of him being out when it was dark. That was when all the really nasty things came out to play. She'd laid out all the things that she needed on the kitchen bench. The big knife, butter knife, chopping board were exactly 3 centimetres away from each other and perfectly parallel. She knew that they were 3 centimetres away from each other because she always measured the distance with a ruler. She'd spent most of the afternoon making sure that everything to make the sandwiches was set out with unreasonable neatness. She'd sent Furrows off to the shops late because she decided to try out a new ingredient, chocolate shavings. This had made her spend an extra hour choosing what sort of thing the shavings would be put in. She tried bowls, plates, cups, glasses, empty Tupperware, and even an old purse she'd found in the bottom drawer. And finally, she decided on a sugar bowl she'd found in the attic. After that, she had to try and figure out how the bowl would be made to fit into the array of the other plates, bowls, knives, and chopping boards. The whole time Furrows had been hiding in the bush, scared of his own shadow, Apnea had spent in some very well-used worry time. When he burst through the back door, puffing and panting like an old nag that had been forced to carry Father Christmas and his millions of presents around the world because his reindeer had all caught chickenpox and his sleigh had broken down, she was so tense that she gave off a high-pitched and wobbly squeal. She was extremely relieved, desperately surprised, and awfully angry all at the same time, which made her face and voice do some very strange contortions and warbles.
"Oh my goodness, Furrows, where have you been?"
she squawked.
"Well,"
said Furrows between gasps, shakes, sweats and pants, but he didn't get to finish the sentence as his mother was already interrupting.
"Oh, the horror of my imaginings, dear boy. I can't begin to explain the awfulness of the things that I'd pictured happening to you."
"Well, Mum,"
Furrows managed to blurt out but was interrupted yet again by Apnea's twittering. It was as if she didn't want to hear him, that she was only concerned with her own worried state, that her anguish was all that really mattered. It crossed Furrow's mind that he needn't be there at all, that she'd just keep warbling on and on her own. He guessed that he wouldn't be missed at all if he just crept up to his room.
"I had visions of great swooping, sharp-clawed flying lizards plummeting down from the skies to steal you away. I thought of you being squished by some mighty giant's clumping foot, balls of lightning hitting you and turning you into a blackened charcoal pile of dust, evil thumping monsters doing what they do best and munching you up like a well-made sandwich."
Apnea's terrible speech went on for an age. Furrow started to think the same thing he often thought when Apnea started ranting. He thought that he might try and make some sort of dummy that looked just like him and place it on a chair in the kitchen. He doubted that his mother would ever notice the difference. He could go and do something constructive, like trying to calm down after his terrifying ordeal with the huge black ground monster, or as you and I know it, his shadow.
"Vicious hellhounds tearing at you, ripping you limb from limb as they are prone to do on terrible nights like this."
According to Apnea, every night was a terrible night like this. There had never been, to Furrow's memory, anything other than terrible nights like this. She took the bag of shopping from Furrow's and went over to the kitchen bench, where she had prepared the sandwich-making equipment, never once stopping her preposterous talk, never once slowing down to give Furrow's the hug he so desperately needed.
teams of malicious ninjas carrying all manner of prickly, bristly weapons running through the town, perishing all that they come across.
On and on she went, unravelling horror after horror. With each new dreadful imagining, Furrows grew more and more tense, which was pretty much the last thing he needed.
Most people have a point at which it is impossible to become more nervous. Furrows hadn't found that point yet. Most people get to a point where they can't possibly become more tense and usually end up in a hospital somewhere, but not Furrows. He just kept getting more and more anxious without having any breakdowns or health issues or anything like that. It was as if his head soaked up the tension like a sponge, a huge planet-sized sponge. The more nervousness you filled Furrows up with, the bigger his sponge got, but the smaller and smaller he felt. He was a strange-looking creature with his big head and eyes, but his nose and mouth were small and twitchy, like a frightened rodent's.
Billowing ghostly mists that roll over the land, eating up all the people they come across and leaving nothing behind but their clothes and teeth.
Furrow's mum continued as she carefully, but with shaky hands, added the chocolate shavings to the sugar bowl, pinch by tiny pinch.
A bird-tempered wizard taking you away to work in his kitchen, making you prepare twisted wizard food like peppered muffins, wood chip pasta, and deep-fried frog fingers with ice cream, with you chained to an angry weasel the whole time as you worked your fingers to the bone,
she went on as they sat down to eat their insane sandwiches.
Awful sock pixies stealing your shoes to get at your nice woolly socks while the rest of you is stripped bare by t-shirt monkeys, short trouser grumpies and underpants trolls.
They finished their meal and had tea in the television room.
They didn't watch the television, but Apnea kept it because it reminded her of her dead husband, who had watched the game shows every night after dinner.
Apnea believed that all the programmes were trying to convince her to go out of the house.
They would try and make her believe that there were no monsters out there, but she knew different. Game shows tried to convince you that everything was bright and happy, and then there was the news. As far as Apnea was concerned, the news managed to miss out all the real things that were happening, the real and terrifying truths of the planet, like marauding ninjas and bad-tempered wizards that would steal children, monsters that killed husbands. The news always tried to convince her that other things were going on, mad lies about politicians meeting in faraway lands to talk about things that didn't mean anything to anyone, puffy-lipped celebrities adopting children from poor countries, people going into space, that sort of thing. Apnea knew it was all lies, or at least not the full truth. She had experienced the reality of the world. She had seen the monsters that lurked in the dark, sometimes even hid in plain view, and the shock of it had changed her forever. Some of the evil out there was real, but over the years she'd managed to warp it. She had been so petrified that the whole world had turned dark, gone weird. She believed all the things that her addled brain told her, even if most of them weren't true.
One bad experience had changed her forever. The death of her husband, Furrow's dad. And now she lived in a world of fear, born of her own mind.
Dangling tree hippos crunching you in their powerful jaws.
Because somehow dangling tree hippos seemed more real to her than politicians. On and on she went, right up to when Furrows was being tucked into bed.
Mole dwarves that shimmer with diamond dust from their many riches, burrowing great tunnels into which you had fallen, and on discovering you in their lair, turning you blind with the great shiny gemstones that they worship, and making you darn their filthy socks with your sense of touch alone.
Blah, blah, blah. On and on it went until she'd finished tucking him in, still ranting, and waddled out of the room. She left the light on, as she always did, so that the shadow demons wouldn't get him. The last thing Furrows heard was,
"Dastardly wrinkled fairy cakes with the minds of crazed, grave-robbing feral dumpies!"
And he could make out no more as she trundled off to her bedroom to imagine yet more horrors and evils. He didn't even know what dumpies were, but considering the company they were in, with mole dwarves, vicious hellhounds, underpant trolls and tree hippos, he didn't think they'd be very pleasant at all. Furrows lay in bed, his huge, bulging eyes fixed on the stippled lumps of the cheap plaster on the ceiling, trying his best to grasp just how many horrors there were in the world.
Furrows didn't have anyone around to tell him that most of what his mother said was nonsense.
Apnea didn't even let him go to school or talk to any other people of his age. All he knew of the world was what his mother told him. But even with that, part of him doubted her. The misty memories of his father kept some hope alive in him, that things weren't all as bad as Apnea said. Furrows wished he could have talked to Apnea about his trip to the shops. He would have liked for her to have taken a pity on him and tried to make him feel better, given him a cuddle, put some plasters on his prickled body and kissed it all better. But Furrows understood how difficult it was for his mum, so he didn't try to push his point. He knew that whatever Apnea had to deal with was far worse than his trivial terror. So he just tried to forget about it and hope that he never had to go to the shops very late ever again. After a while, Furrows managed to get to sleep and dreamt a long dream about a huge empty desert. A desert that was mercifully free of flying lizards, monsters and evil wizards. There was a family of white horses there, galloping and playing. There was nothing to be scared of. Even the shadows were friendly in the desert of the white horses.